It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's an important week ahead for the Pittsburgh City Council. Time now to welcome in 90.5 WESA City Council reporter Noah Brode, who joins us each and every Monday. Good day, Noah.
Good day, Paul.
Council gave preliminary approval to Councilman Ricky Burgess's bills to reform the police bureau's domestic violence response policies. We've been talking about this and following it extensively over the course of the past week, certainly here on Essential Pittsburgh. And now a final vote comes tomorrow. Talk about what's happening here.
Right. So this is legislation that has been in the works since January. The month that really all the details came to light regarding the death of Cassandra Wade. She was a Larimer woman who was reportedly killed by her abusive boyfriend, who then shot himself in a confrontation with police. And that was on New Year's Eve, where that whole issue began. And so what we've seen since then is, you know, Councilman Burgess sort of introducing these bills, then immediately withdrawing them to sort of formulate them in this committee, this ad hoc committee that he began, pulling together women's groups and other experts, sort of just getting a sense of what needs to be in this legislation. And what came out, it's been delayed for a long time, given the issues regarding the police department. However, it now is the time, essentially, for these bills. And what's going to happen, there's a couple of bills. One is going to pay for training under this new system called the Maryland Domestic Violence Lethality Assessment Program. So essentially what this does is whenever, you know, the police receive a call regarding a domestic violence incident, the responder has to ask the caller a certain series of questions, and then based on their answers, they decide what the risk level is of, you know, imminent violence to that person. And then at the end, they're required to ask that person if they want them to call a women's center or women's shelter for them. So a couple of new things happening here, just sort of getting more detail in those 911 calls, because that was a problem in the Cassandra Wade case, was that she never actually said it was a domestic violence issue specifically, although it certainly seemed that way, which is why it was not against code for the officers to leave the situation afterward, as we've discussed in the past.
Right. They were not able to get a clear picture of the imminent danger that she was in. And also, there was just simply a disconnect in terms of the communication there.
Right, exactly. Whenever they got the call, it was sort of a cut off. So the officers went to respond. They talked to her boyfriend at the time, and he said that the situation was under control. They left after a few minutes after that moment, and really, that was sort of where the questions began, is, you know, why did you leave? They weren't actually breaking city code at the time. And,
this was something that Councilman Patrick Dowd said all along. He said, you know, it's a matter of fixing the policy. It's not a manpower issue. It's just a matter of looking at the procedures that are in place.
Right. And that's exactly what this does. However, an interesting thing to note here is, what was not included is for police officers who are responding to the domestic violence call to the scene. If an officer is going to check up on it, they still do not have to talk to the person who made the 911 call. And that is something that women's groups had wanted. You know, they are pleased with the legislation for sure, because it is an improvement. However, they did want the officers to have to speak with the person who made the call. That is still not the case, even if this passes tomorrow, which I expect that it will.
And what is interesting about this legislation is not only what's in it, but what is not in it.
Right.
Including a couple of items that women's groups represented here on the program last week were very vehement about. Explain those.
Right. So what happened last week and the week prior that was sort of controversial was that an amendment was proposed by Councilman Ricky Burgess, who is the sponsor of all these bills. And really what that did was it eliminated this no-tolerance policy for Pittsburgh police officers. That really what that policy does right now is, if a police officer is found guilty of a domestic violence crime, they are essentially just axed immediately. And that's,
one and done.
That's the no-tolerance policy.
And why did he want to get rid of it?
Well, the What the law department has been saying is that since this no tolerance policy only applies to city police officers rather than all city employees, it can be sort of easily appealed in court, and sort of those officers can get that ruling thrown out essentially if they just appeal that decision, because it sort of focuses in on police officers only and not all city employees, and
so viewed as somewhat discriminatory,
right, or prejudicial, or whatever the term might be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So and of course the women's group said no, we want to keep the no tolerance policy, and so it looks as though pending the vote tomorrow night it has been kept.
Right. You may see that in the future, though, with the no tolerance policy. The law department's opinion is, still the law department's opinion. I think the issue with the council members was that, these two items should not be lumped together. This should not be an amendment on a different bill. That issue should be its own argument, essentially, back and forth between the council members. So,
and that's a great point. And yet we see this all the time, say in Congress, for example. You'll see something tacked onto an amendment that has nothing to do with the actual legislation, but it's a way of railroading something through.
Right. And this has something to do with the legislation that is up for final passage tomorrow. However, it is a different issue because this is regarding domestic violence issues involving police officers, where they are sort of implicated in that issue. Whereas the bills that are up for final passage tomorrow involve the police officer's response to outside domestic violence issues. So really, I think council members said, we don't want these issues lumped together. So, Councilman Burgess introduced that amendment. He may introduce legislation in the future that gets rid of the no tolerance policy. We have yet to see.
And do you see this, before we move on, do you see this passing tomorrow? Does it have the votes?
I do expect it to pass tomorrow. I usually, the votes don't change significantly from Wednesday to Tuesday, and this was passed just, last week, so, or passed committee, rather, I should say, just last week. So I do expect it to pass.
And again, that final vote is tomorrow. And meanwhile, Councilman Burgess, a very busy man, he's also proposed another bill regarding the police. Talk about what this particular piece of legislation is that's up for a preliminary vote tomorrow. On Wednesday.
On Wednesday, right. This would require the Bureau of Police to publish an annual abridged version of its operating rules and procedures. So essentially what this does is requires the police department to, tell the public every year, how it is doing its business, what the rules are for police officers internally. The idea here is to increase transparency. Burgess, cited a few different other major cities in the U.S. that have this policy already, and he says it's, improved transparency in those areas, including Los Angeles, Chicago, Seattle, Denver, and other cities as well. Really, he's saying, if you increase transparency, if you let the people know how the police operate, they'll have more confidence in, knowing that.
And confidence is an issue right now.
Right, exactly. Given the events of the past, few months, some people may have some questions about the police bureau. Maybe this could help stem some of those.
Other news, Councilman Daniel Lavelle will introduce a bill tomorrow that would allow the city to apply for a $20 million Tiger Grant for the Lower Hill District redevelopment project.
Right. So to clarify here, this redevelopment project is for the site of the former Civic Arena, which obviously was demolished and torn down and turned into parking lots. So what a Tiger Grant really does is it allows for planning for future transportation investments. And obviously, $20 million is not a whole heck of a lot in the grand scheme of things with this sort of size of redevelopment in the heart of the city. But really what this is going to do, I'm thinking, will be to sort of get the ideas down to establish, what the new street grid's going to be and all the details therein. And the Sports and Exhibition Authority, which obviously, is a big player in the stadiums in the area, will control this money along, and they'll be working with the Penguins, who are, controlling the redevelopment project in general. So really what this does is sort of planning out what the future is going to look like for that site, which is currently parking. And one thing I want to note about those parking spots is that revenue from those parking spots is partially diverted toward a special fund that gives money to the Hill District in general, just projects, sprucing up the Hill District, redeveloping the Hill District. So eventually what you're going to see is while the Hill is being developed on the site of the former Civic Arena, it's actually that revenue is going to go away for the Hill District elsewhere.
And I'm guessing that's no small amount of revenue, those spaces near the Consol Center. I'm guessing there's not a spot left on a night when there's some sort of an event going on there.
Parking in Uptown and in the Hill in general on a Penguins night is hard to find.
Or a concert night or nights when there are other events, civic events going on there. And before we move on, this is an important issue simply because the lament that we've heard from people over the years is particularly people who live in the Hill District and value that neighborhood and the cohesiveness of that neighborhood have said that the Civic Arena essentially destroyed the previous Hill District street grid. So now it's a matter of bringing that all back together. Does this money, this grant, help to do that?
It could. And I think that's the idea. Having talked with the director of the URA, the Urban Redevelopment Authority, about this project that's going to be taking place over a long time period, the idea is to sort of transition from the downtown streets that you have on one side of the former Civic Arena site to the Hill District streets that you have on the other side. You know, when it was built, it was sort of smack dab in the heart of the Hill District there, and it's really... Could be argued was a detrimental force for the Hill District.
Certainly cut it off from the rest of downtown.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that situation develops. We're talking with our city council reporter, 90.5 WESA's Noah Broad. One final issue to hit before we wrap this up. City residents are submitting a petition to council on Wednesday that demands a public hearing on UPMC's Luna project near its Shadyside Hospital. What is this all about?
Right. Well, these residents, they're upset that this project, this includes the construction of the new Center for Innovative Science, as well as the Luna project. This is two buildings they're building in the Shadyside down there on Baum Boulevard and Center Avenue. They're saying that this construction project is severely disrupting parking in the Shadyside. They haven't really given an idea of what they want to do to it, at least not in the document that's on council's website. But we'll see what they have to say on Wednesday.
Very good. 90.5 WESA City Council reporter Noah Broad joining us. Noah, as always, great thanks.
Thanks, Paul.
Coming up, we'll learn whether Washington, D.C.'s green solution to stormwater and sewage overflows could work here. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.